For only 10 cents per child per year, the Amma Resonance Healing Foundation makes homeopathic malaria prevention available for children in Africa. Their aim is now to reach 1 million children, and with your help, 600 Africa volunteers will make this possible. Please visit www.arhf.nl and donate. That's www.arhf.nl. Thank you. Hello, Eugenie here. You are in for such a treat today. We have got award-winning filmmaker Laurel Chaitin in. She produced an amazing film called Just One Drop, which is about homeopathy. It is such an important film. If you haven't watched it, I urge you to do so. So a little bit about Laurel. She has been influencing social issues for over 30 years. Her high-profile films have screened at film festivals around the world, at universities and at medical schools. She's won numerous awards, been nominated for a national Emmy, and been broadcast on PBS's Emmy-winning national series, Independent Lens and POV. Her previous films have gained her acknowledgement and respect from doctors, researchers, and institutions, including Harvard Medical School, UCLA, MIT, and Harvard University. Laurel was an artist in residence at the Bellagio Conference and Study Center, sponsored by Rockefeller Foundation, Yaddo, and the McDowell Colony. Before working in documentary film, Chaitin was a certified sign language interpreter and involved in deaf theater as a writer and director. She is the CEO of Blind Dog Films and a member owner of New Day Films. Her intention in all her work is to entertain her audience while educating them, and she definitely delivers that with her documentary Just One Drop. It is so entertaining and also so educational. Actually, since the success of her film, Laurel has become very passionate about exploring unique forms of distribution and exhibition, which led her into the world of digital marketing. So she's recently launched Your Video Angel to help entrepreneurs use video and storytelling to attract and retain customers. I know you're going to absolutely love this episode, and we'll jump right in. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today we are hanging out with award-winning filmmaker Laurel Chaitin. A very warm welcome, Laurel.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be here.
You know, I just can't believe my luck to have you here today and to get to spend some time with you, because I have two favorite movies that I could watch over and over again. It is one of your films, Just One Drop. I know you've made many, but that one is my favorite and the one we'll be talking about today. The other one is Frozen 2, which is all about the memory of water. So, yeah, it's just so exciting to have you on today. But before we jump in, how did you learn about homeopathy?
Oh, well, I knew actually what homeopathy was way back when I was maybe a teenager. I was very interested in alternative medicine, and you know, I knew a little bit about it, didn't think much of it. And then as I grew up, I became a big skeptic. And I always joke and saying I was from Boston, and that's the medical mecca. And so I was very influenced by that mindset. And so I started hearing about homeopathy, and I thought, oh my God, it's so stupid. Like, why does anybody spend their money on this stuff? So when I'm in Santa Fe, and I had a friend of mine who had some kind of health issue, pretty actually significant health issue, and she was waiting for this man who's an MD homeopath who lived in Los Angeles. He had retired and came back again. He was waiting for his license to come back or be renewed. And she's like, I just want to work with him. And I remember like rolling my eyes internally and like, oh my God, what is she wasting her time for? And she went out to Los Angeles to see him from Santa Fe. It's, you know, a flight. And she started getting a little better. And I had a chronic health condition. And I remember it got exacerbated because I got in yet another car accident. And now I actually had insurance money from that car accident. And I said, I'm going to go out and see this guy. And I was really, when do people go to homeopath? They go when they're desperate, when they've seen and tried every single possible intervention. That was me. But by the time I went, I actually was open-minded. I wasn't skeptical. And then I went and met this guy. And understanding he was an MD who only practiced homeopathy because he got such good results. So I went to see him, and I remember we were talking. He knew I was a filmmaker, and he had actually seen some of my films. And he said, when you get better, I want you to make a film about autism and homeopathy, because he was working with autism. And I used to joke and say, doctor's orders. And so I said, well, yeah, maybe. And then I started feeling better. And I went, okay, what kind of film do you want? And he goes, oh, nobody knows how much success I'm getting. And I want you to, you know, really make the film about this. I said, okay, find me one family who has an autistic kid who's doing homeopathy. And I said, find me that family and I'll consider it. Well, he found me this family that not only were they did have an had an autistic kid and was working with homeopathy, but they had shot like 10 hours of footage, of home video footage from when the kid, before the kid was born, when she was pregnant, the birth, the kid being normal, the kid, the moment when the kid, the money shot, I call it, when the kid, you see the kids becoming autistic, and then kept going. And I went, oh my God. Okay, so now I'm going to go interview this family. And at first I was going to make a film just about homeopathy and autism. So I went to see the family and it was such a great interview. I mean, Nancy Korn gives a killer interview. She's so articulate. And I came away and I remember my crew said, that was amazing, right? It was one of those stellar interviews. So I started there. And then what started happening is I felt that's too small. Like people aren't going to, you know, autism is too small. I actually need to explain a bit more of what homeopathy is. I need to look at other conditions. So that was where I started, knowing that was kind of be the center. But then I went, oh, okay, now where am I going to go? And then I'm going around. I found this guy in New York who had MRSA. I think in Australia you might call it MSRA. But his homeopath handed me to him. And he also, as a filmmaker, had footage. And I remember seeing his footage. I'm like, oh my God, I love home footage that's skanky and raw. I love using that in films. So I went, okay, that's another story. And then, so then we're moving along. I'm working with my editor. We're making this film of which we had no real strong story. There was just this film and, you know, this story and that story. And we're talking about the history, but it was flat. It had no real drama. And then I remember this day, was it 2015, 2016, around there. It was November. And I remember Rachel Roberts, who's one of my main characters, wrote me and let me go back. Then it was March 2015. I hope I have my dates right. And the Australian report came out. And I remember it going everywhere. And that was the moment where I went, excuse me, holy shit, what's happening? So bad that somebody, it was a colleague and friend of mine in Boston who knew about homeopathy, read that report, saw the articles about the report, and said, I don't have to think about homeopathy anymore. Okay, and I'm like, that was like, oh, we got to do something about this. So I got slightly obsessed with this report. And I remember I was interviewing Rachel about it and Alex about it, sort of circling around it. So she knew my obsession with trying to debunk this report. And then she said, you know, there's a guy in Australia who's actually doing a lot of research to try to really figure out what's going on. His name is Jerry. Tell him I sent you. I said, okay, so I'll never forget that. I had this conversation on Skype. I think it was like 11 o'clock at night because I always have to do cuckoo hours with you people in Australia. and I had this conversation with him. I mean, I really remember it so clearly. Now, you have to understand, I was very close to finishing this film, which I thought was actually not a very good film, but we were very close. We had no money left. And I'm talking to this guy, and he's telling me this. And my memory is, he said to me, when are you coming? His memory was me saying, when am I coming? But I kind of knew from that conversation that I was going to be going to Australia. But I had no money. So I went to my executive producer and I just told him the story, and he had given me a lot of money for this. And he said, okay, if you actually can find the story, like really find out more, I will send you to Australia. So I went, okay. So I started talking more to Jerry, and he gave me some more information. And then, this is what it was. That's when he found out about the first reviewer. that there was somebody who had done the first report, submitted her findings, and she got, as they say in Australia, sacked. And so that was enough of a smoking gun. He says, I'll send you. So now I've done something I've never done in a film. I was becoming an investigative journalist, which I, none of my films have this kind of flavor to them. So there I was on a plane going all the way to Down Under. And it, I have to say, was amazing. It was an amazing experience. I mean, Jerry and his family put me up, and they were just, he became like my brother. And, you know, I call my Australian family. And we went and shot, and I was able to get the head of the NHMRC to interview me. He was another country, you know, I had to get him. And then I got all these people to talk to me that worked on that, which was really interesting, because I think it was because of my former work that I had a lot of credibility and clout, because I had people from Harvard Medical School in my other films, and, you know, they sort of, they were okay with talking to me. So there I was doing this investigative, you know, journalism of what happened to that report. So then that report kind of took over the film, because my editor and I were both like, oh my God, now we have some drama. And then I think it was another full year of working on that film before it was finally actually finished. So we totally changed everything.
Jerry is such an unsung hero. I interviewed him for our second episode. And before that, I've had several other conversations with him just in his own time. He's so generous with his time, and what he's doing for homeopathy worldwide is just absolutely amazing. One day I hope there's going to be a statue made of him in Australia, because he deserves that.
And he's so humble. Yeah, he's all of our heroes. He really is. He's our hero.
Laurel, you know, just, and you as well, you and Rachel and Alex and Jerry, I cannot thank you guys enough. The homeopathic community will never be able to thank you enough for getting this information out there, because it's so important. And people are shocked when they see this movie. They are completely shocked. How can this be happening in Australia? You know, it just seems so crazy. I think we like to think of ourselves as a free country and not corrupt, but then you have this report that's come out and all the fraud around it. And, you know, anyone listening to this who hasn't seen the documentary, you're going to have to watch it now, because it will completely blow your mind. Now, can you tell us a little bit about why homeopathy is so controversial? It's been around for 200 years. Surely, you know, science has settled on it, but why is homeopathy so controversial?
I don't know if I'm an expert to answer that, but mostly it's because, you know, they say there's, quote unquote, nothing in it, because really nobody can prove why it works. And I actually think that's the only reason it's controversial, because I think if they really could figure out the mechanism of action as to why it works with a real sound, you know, explanation that made sense to the, quote unquote, scientific community, I think things would change, which is why Alex is doing his work with his water research lab. But I think it really is. It's really hard to understand, because there's nothing, you know, nothing in it. And the other reason I think it's so controversial is that it's really hard to find the right remedy. So I think if every single person who went to a homeopath took a remedy and felt better, it actually might be a little less controversial. But I know for me, I'm like, the homeopaths are totally frustrated with me most of the time, because nothing works, you know. So I understand the skepticism around it. But I think mostly is that there isn't something that is a clear-cut reason as to why it works. We just know it does work. And so people feel it's all anecdotal, which, you know, even though there's tests, it is anecdotal. So that's why I think that's the most obvious reason why it's so controversial. I don't know if you have your own explanation.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. It's just basically the way the remedies are made, I would say, because it's so dilute. And it sometimes frustrates me, because it feels like double standards. There is, and I don't have the dates of it exactly, but I think it was the British Journal of Medicine or something like that, which had an article not so long ago where they were saying that paracetamol has been used for 100 years and they still don't quite know exactly how it works. So you don't see a whole bunch of you know, medical debunkers going around saying, why are you, you know, why is orthodox medicine around? Because, you know, we don't know how paracetamol works, which would probably be the most used drug worldwide. But for 100 years, they couldn't explain exactly how it works. So I just always get frustrated at these double standards.
Yeah, there are. And then, annoying. You know, they used to say, you'll love this story, we don't know how anesthesia works. We don't know how people have loss of consciousness. So we're all kind of going around this. And I was talking to this guy I know when I first started doing the research on the report, and I wanted to talk to someone who really understood statistics and reports and all of this in a world that I didn't really know anything about. So I contacted this guy that I knew who's a MD, PhD, he's a statistician and anesthesiologist. And so I contacted him and I said, well, we don't know how anesthesia works. And he goes, yes, we do. He said, you haven't been following me. And he apparently has figured out exactly why it works. And he said, he's very, you know, he's funny. And he goes, no, you haven't been following my research. So we no longer can say that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the other example I love is gravity. Yeah. Like, you know, we still don't know exactly how gravity works. We have this great place here in Perth called SciTech, and they've got all these science things, and the kids love going there because it's very hands-on. So they get to play with a lot of different things and figure out how certain concepts work. And there was this huge display on gravity, and it said, even though scientists can't explain how gravity works, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, that doesn't mean that we're floating off the face of the earth just because we don't understand how gravity works. And I sometimes feel with homeopathy, we're just not advanced enough to quite understand the mechanism of action. There are lots of theories out there, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Have you been following the work that Alex is doing with the water research?
Yeah, I just recently listened to the AHA. They had their annual conference, and he's now going to Switzerland, I believe, to go and do some more work over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when we were interviewing him, I don't know if you saw the epilogue in the film.
Yes.
We added, yes, and he talked about quantum
coherence. I got the extended version.
Yeah, it's the only version now, but mm-hmm. quantum coherence domain is where he was at the last time he was doing research. And of course, we asked him to explain that. It's very complicated. But, you know, but he's really doing a pretty extensive research. Just that's mm-hmm. his goal, is to figure out what is the mechanism of action. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah.
So, Laurel, just a little bit more about the film itself. Like, why did you decide to make it? How long did it take you to make it? How has it changed your life?
Yeah, well, great question. It took me 8 years to finish that film. And it was, of all the films I made, and they were all difficult, it was definitely the most difficult. And it was difficult for so many reasons. One was that I couldn't get any traditional funding. I normally would get grants. I would get some money that would be supporting me. For this, it was all done by crowdsourcing. And I remember thinking, nobody cares. Nobody, you know, I was getting turned down left and right for all these grants. Until I started leaning into the people that were really interested, and I went, they care. So I started really nurturing that audience in a time where I didn't really know what I was doing other than I was driven by, I have to make this film. So I just started, you know, building this audience. And this is before people talked about building audiences. This was like 10 years ago, really. And I was just reaching out to them, emailing them. They kept giving me more money. I kept having more campaigns, think of fun things to do to keep them engaged. And then I started finding some really big donors. And they came on as executive producers. I had to. But it was still a struggle. And it was still not enough to really finish the film. So all of that was really, really stressful for me. But then even once I got finishing funds, the biggest stress for me was getting that calibration between the skeptics in my life who were really skeptical about homeopathy and the homeopathic community, and getting that balance so that I could make a film that those skeptical people will actually watch. So I had to align myself with them and come from that point of view so that they would enter the film. And at the same time, really respect the homeopathic community. And so getting that calibration really would keep me up at night. And I'm not kidding. That was the thing at 3 o'clock in the morning where I would be, I can't make this film. I cannot do it. I was so, had such anxiety about getting the story right, telling it the right way, you know, really honoring the homeopathic community. Because if I was making a film just for the homeopathic community, it would not have been that hard. But I realized that film would not really work because I really wanted to reach people that didn't know what homeopathy was. If I wanted to make a film that was clearly from a skeptical point of view, that would not have been as hard. But to get that balance, do you know what I mean? And still has really leaned towards respecting the homeopathic community. So giving people, figuring out a way that people would get that opening so that they would at least be curious about it. You know, if that's as far as I could bring people, I was happy. You know, so getting getting that note and working also with an editor who was skeptical, because everybody is skeptical, really, about homeopathy. And almost everyone in my life was like that. It was very emotionally stressful for me. Mm-hmm. So how it changed my life, to answer your question, is, well, when it was done, then those same people that were giving me money, which really supported the film for all those years who were following me, I knew that was how I was going to distribute it. And I knew since it didn't get funded by any traditional means, it was not going to be distributed by any traditional means. So it was going to be distributed how it was funded, which was all crowdsourcing. And I ended up getting in all these theaters that were really driven by people deciding they want to bring it to their community. And I opened it in London, but then toured it in Australia for a month. And I think that was the best month of my adult life. I'm not exaggerating. And I'm not saying it just because I'm sitting across from you, in a way, virtually sitting across from you. Because yeah. I went from theater to theater to person, and mostly a lot of them sold out. And just like, you know, went from every city. What do you want to do now? What do you want to do now? And it was such a magical, magical month for me that I honestly came away and like, wow. And I made some money with this film. And the biggest way it changed me is that I felt like I was done with filmmaking. I feel like it was really hard and it was such a great release and I'm done. So those big ways. But homeopathy, everything has just permanently changed me. I mean, I never look at medicine the same way. I mean, even everything going on with COVID, all of this, I'm always looking at it from a homeopathic point of view. Like that, it's hard to, once you know that, to leave that. You know, so it affected me in a very profound way, working on that film. Probably more than any of my other films. Yeah.
A lot of people say that my first interview on the podcast was Amy Lansky. She's the author of the book Impossible Cure, which is her son.
She was one of the first people I connected with when I started making the film.
Oh, she's amazing as well. And, you know, it's interesting because she's then since gone on to write a book called Act of Consciousness, which is all about synchronicity and that sort of thing. And, you know, if you think about the fact that she was an ex-NASA scientist, and this is what homeopathy does to people. It completely changes your paradigm. And once it opens up your mind, you can't unsee what you've seen, or you can't unknow what you know. So it really opens your mind up in so many different ways. And so many people will say that, you know, they come from a medical model, but once they get introduced to the idea of homeopathy, it's like a new way of looking at the world and about possibilities. And it's hard to walk away unchanged, for sure.
Yeah, and what I found, most of the homeopaths I met were people that started off, they didn't like go in and say, I'm going to grow up and become a homeopath. There's very few, except for maybe Hillary Dorian's daughter. But most homeopaths started off in a totally different place. They were scientists or they were doctors or whatever. And then, and Alex is an example of this, then they had a remedy. They were changed. They got better. And the way, wait a minute, what is this? They were sick. Mm-hmm. They got better. What is this? And it totally changed their path. And I think 90% of the homeopaths I met around the world have that story. So that's a compelling story.
It is. I was going to ask you, am I understanding this correctly? But because of you having to find different ways to fund this film, it sounds like you've then gone on to help other filmmakers use this method as well. Is that correct?
Oh, well, that was, that's a great question. That was a while ago. That was like my first pivot mm-hmm. from when I finished the film. Mm-hmm. I said, oh my God, this is one, do I understood marketing, and two, I really understood this kind of distribution. And so I wanted to work with other filmmakers to teach them how to do that. And I was working with this company, the one that I had, there was a company in Australia that I toured my film with that used this model. And the one that had pretty much invented the model is in the United States. So I used them to tour my film in the United States. And I said to the CEO, I know how to teach filmmakers how to do this. It's a steep learning curve. It's not easy to understand how to do it, but I've become like really good at it. And I harassed him long enough until he finally said, okay, and he hired me. So I worked with them for about 2.5 years. Just, you know, doing all that. So in that sense, yes, I was trying to work with filmmakers, showing them alternative ways to distribute their film. But now I've gone into another direction. I pivoted many times since then.
I love how you were essentially forced into finding different ways of funding this film. And it's very interesting in itself. Like, I always find it fascinating why there are so many debunkers worldwide of homeopathy. Like, why are people working so hard to debunk homeopathy when it's been around for over 200 years? It is used by over 500 million people worldwide. It is one of the main forms of medicine in countries like India. It's been used by the royal family for 200 years. Why do you think people are not more accepting of homeopathy, and why are there such strong debunkers out there that seem to have their whole life revolved around debunking homeopathy when all we're trying to do is help?
Yeah, and understanding all they're trying to do is help too. And this is the perspective. Yeah, and I do call them debunkers and not skeptics. They're like professional debunkers. And I think they're doing it for a few reasons. One is they truly, truly believe that homeopathy is bunk, and they're protecting the people. And there are some that are really, that's what they do. But the other reason is, I think the underlying reason is that if they truly understood what homeopathy is and how it works, they would have what I call ontological shock, which means their whole worldview is shattered. And that is a really uncomfortable place to be. So I think that they have a lot at stake with making sure that their worldview is intact. So that's what I think that the real psychological underpinning of what is going on with many debunkers. Mm-hmm. And you know where I learned that term? I always love to say where I learned the term ontological shock is one of the films I made, which is a film about people that believe they're abducted by aliens and the Harvard psychiatrists who work with them. He said the very same thing about people with alien abduction, that it was what happened to those people, it was ontological shock, because their whole worldview was shattered. Mm-hmm. So that's where I learned the term. There's a lot of parallels.
Yeah. You've done, and this is a little bit off topic, but not. You've done so many different films. Can you give our listeners a quick rundown of some of the films that you've made?
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well,
just a super quick rundown everything
okay.
from...
Okay, my first documentary was called Twitch and Shout, and it's about people with the neurological disorder Tourette syndrome. And a lot of people now know what Tourette syndrome was, but back then nobody knew what it was. And for people that don't know what Tourette is, it's the most dramatic symptoms, which only 15% of the people have. They call it coprolalia, where people have uncontrollable swearing and blurting things out, which is actually, you know, it's funny and it's good for a film, but the people think that's all of Tourette and it isn't. So I made it at a time when nobody knew what it was, and that it became a bit of a household word after that. And I actually put a lot of humor in it, which is a lot of my personality anyway. And I think that's why it was such a popular film, because I was looking at disability and actually letting us get up close and laugh. And the people, you know, the people with it were laughing about it. So that was my first. That was Twitch and Shout. And that's the one that put me on the map. And that one, like, whew, all of a sudden I'm in all these film festivals and I'm nominated for big awards and getting big awards. And I'm like, oh, and like, oh, you want to change the world? Make films. So then, and every film I say, I'm done. Like, oh, I can't do that again. It's like when childbirth, you become amnesiac, right? It's like, okay. And then I fall in love. I got to do it again. because I have a topic and I have to tell this story. So I become amnesic at how painful it is to give birth to these films. So the second film was called The Jew and the Lotus, which is about a bunch of rabbis that met with the Dalai Lama in India, because he allegedly had asked the Jewish people, tell me your secret of spiritual survival in exile. So that was The Jew and the Lotus. And then after that, I made Touch, which is this film about alien abduction. And then I made a film called Twisted, I'm not forgetting a film, which is about another neurological disorder, which is called dystonia. And it was really a film about relationships, you know, what it's like when people have this disorder. And then I made The Jew and the Lotus. So those are all my feature-length films, my longer films. And then I made a few shorts.
Mm-hmm. So let me get this right. You could get funding for alien abduction, but not for homeopathy.
I know. A Jew and the Lotus is the only film I never actually got a grant. And I did get a small grant. And it's so funny. I got it from this woman who has funded a lot of my films, just because she really liked my films. And I think she was curious. So she gave me some seed money for that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, wonderful. I know. And what's so funny is that film is my only film that got into Netflix. It's my most mainstream film is about alien abduction. What does that say about my films?
Right. Well, what does that say about us as a human race? So what is the main message that you're trying to get across with this documentary? Why should people go and watch it? And what is the message that you're trying to get out about this documentary?
Got to think about that one. I think it's because I'm always fighting for the underdog, and I think that is probably an underpinning in all of my films. And I feel like homeopathy really did not have a fair shake ever, and it's really been the underdog of medicine. So all I was trying to do with this film is, as I said, have that bit of an opening for people who... So many people are suffering, and they don't know that there's a form of medicine that actually might help them. So that was really what drove me to keep making this film, because, and then I'm going to back up a bit, because when I went back to tell you why the first beginnings of the film was meeting with that homeopath, MD homeopath, I always called that the spark, like that's what started it. But what kept me going for 8 years was hearing story after story after story of people whose lives were dramatically changed with homeopathy. So I know so many people out there that are really suffering and nothing is helping them. So I want them just to know that this is a possibility so that they could choose to have this form of medicine if they wanted it.
Mm-hmm. What you were just saying about that gentleman in your movie that had the MRSA or MRSA, as we say over here, is... antibiotic resistance is very real and it's very scary, and it's because of overuse of antibiotics. And I always say viruses and bacteria have been on this planet for millennia before any of us. They're much smarter than any of us. They're always going to mutate and they're always going to find a way. So to think that us as humans can somehow wipe them out with antibiotics is just a little bit crazy for me, because they're always going to evolve and they're always going to change. And MRSA is a classic example of that. And how with homeopathy, because it works with the body, it was that gentleman was actually able to heal using homeopathy from something that is completely antibiotic resistant and could have ruined his life. It could have been completely life-threatening. So,
yeah. And they say with MRSA, once it's in your system, it doesn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he told me anyway, is that if he kept with that route with antibiotics, if he cut himself again, he could have had another bout of MRSA.
Mm-hmm. And not even to talk about the antibiotics destroying his gut flora, which now with the gut-brain connection, we're just discovering so much more about how 80% of our serotonin is actually made in the gut, not in the brain. So you see all these people on antidepressants, but actually if we just heal their gut, it's going to help their serotonin production, which is going to help their mental health. So that's a whole other topic in itself, but that's why I believe homeopathy is so powerful. What are your hopes for homeopathy for the future, Laurel? What do you see? Where do you see homeopathy going in the future? And what are your hopes for this amazing natural medicine?
Funny, I think my hopes are the same as they were years ago when I finished the film. For me, it's always about the integration of medicine. I would love to see, you know, conventional medicine and homeopathy somehow working together. And so they're not so polarized. And homeopathy is not always out here on its own, but it's really integrated into the healthcare system. And have it be the first line of defense that people use. And more than that, there's another layer also I just want to say is that I would love to see more standardized care with homeopaths. In other words, I don't want it have to be for me as a user of homeopathy, as a patient, to have it my choices of medicine or my health be dependent on that particular homeopath. And I would love to see that there's more of a sharing of knowledge and resource with all of homeopaths around the world. I mean, that I don't know if you, homeopaths share that same dream.
Yeah, can you tell a little bit more about that? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, in other words, like I've been to so many different homeopaths and they each prescribe something totally different. And I would just love to see more of a share of like, oh yeah, I had this, this person had MRSA, here's the remedy I use and here's why I used it, so that there would be more of a consistency.
A standardization
yeah. with all of homeopaths.
So I'll tell you my little take on that of my decades experience is one of the reasons why I love that homeopathy is not standardized and that it is so different is because our patients are so different. So I always say we need more homeopaths. We need homeopaths of all different beliefs, walks of life, colors, races, everything, because at the end of the day, you need to find a homeopath that resonates with you. So the way that I prescribe is not conventional at all. So I'm somebody that uses bowel nosos, endocrine sarcodes, organ supports. I'll use tissue salts alongside constitutional remedies and detoxing. So some of my clients love that. Others come to me and go, what on earth have you given me? So those clients prefer going to somebody who prescribes more classical and will give them one single remedy. It's interesting. One of my clients with children with autism came to see me and she loved this prescription that I gave her. We were detoxing some of the vaccinations. We were treating her child's gut with a bowel nosode. And she said, well, my family is in Ireland. Can you recommend somebody there? I said, well, I don't know anybody, but here's somebody that a colleague recommended. She sent the person there and they just gave one single remedy. And she was really shocked and it didn't have that great results. But some people really love that. So I actually love that homeopaths prescribe so differently and I get bored very easily. And that's one of the reasons I love homeopathy is that there's so many different ways of prescribing. And I feel that as clients, they then have that opportunity to go to a practitioner that resonates with them and that prescribes the way that they like. So I like that there's different ways of prescribing.
You know, I'm listening to you and I'm reminded how for 8 years, or really 10 years altogether working on the film, how I never, ever got bored talking to a homeopath. That I find homeopaths, and I'm really not saying this to flatter you, but to be some of the smartest people I've ever met and the most interesting. And I never got tired of hearing of a case that I'd say, well, what remedy did you give? And I got to hear their whole process of coming up with the remedy. And it just gets really deep and really fascinating. So I'm listening to you now and I'm re-engaging with that part of myself. And I said, yeah, this is why that film was actually such a great experience. On top of all the anxiety I had, it was also very, very rich.
Well, I have this little theory in the back of my head that I believe in another 50 years' time, because homeopathy is just energy medicine. And we're just starting to learn about, you know, quantum energy and, you know, biology of belief, you know, the power of the mind and all that sort of stuff. And I won't be surprised in a few decades' time if you come to a homeopath and they just say that remedy's name and the residence of that is able to cure the person. Because I cannot tell you, Laurel, how many times I've had phone consultations, online consultations. And I remember a time specifically where the client was sitting in front of me on the computer like you are now. And I said to her the remedy, Nat Mer. And as I said that, she had this visceral response in her body. She's like, I can feel it already. And, you know, some people are more sensitive to energies than others. But even just saying the name of that remedy, the resonance of that was, very profound for her. So, you know, and what I was going to say about homeopaths is I don't think we're smart, but I think we're open-minded. And I think that's the difference, is being open-minded and not being scared to have your paradigm or your beliefs challenged. And then if you find there is a different way, then going in that direction and not being so stubborn and closed-minded that you're not entertaining the idea of another option. Very curious. Definitely. So just to finish up with, I would love to ask you your three favorite homeopathic remedies and why.
Oh, I can't do that. I don't have a favorite homeopathic remedy. Can
okay,
we have a
sure.
different question? I can tell you what my favorite homeopathic story, but ask me a different question. Do you have any?
Yeah, no, you can tell your favorite homeopathic story if you like.
Oh, well, this is one I used to tell in audiences all the time about my dog, Shadow. And this is, he had, I was going to a workshop somewhere. I was going away, some retreat. And like 2 days, 3 days before, he started developing this cough. And it was really, sounded like a duck. And it was kennel cough. And kennel cough is very contagious. So I would walk, I'm right here in Central Park, and I would walk him, and he'd be, I tell this story, it was always have to have a sound effect. And I'm like, oh no, and I had to like stay away. So I don't have a home, I don't have a veterinarian, because I would treat mostly homeopathically my animals. But I had to call a vet and say, what is it? Oh, this is very serious. You need to bring your dog in. I said, well, what's the treatment? They said 10 days of antibiotics. And it also would mean, one, I don't want to put my dog in antibiotics. And two, it meant I'd have to cancel my retreat. I said, give me a couple of days. So I contacted my homeopath and I said, what do you recommend? And she's like, okay. And so she, there was one remedy. I don't remember what they were, but I was with full belief and it's going to work and desire. And I put it in water. Here, Sharon, I have the water. Drinks it. Nothing. Like, oh, what do I do? Okay, she came up with the second remedy. Again, the same belief. This is why people say it's all belief. I'm like, no, it's not. It's the same belief, same excitement. Here, take this, because I wanted to go on that retreat and I wanted my dog to feel better. So I put the water there. Nothing. The other thing I have to add, it was worse with movement. So when I would walk him around, it got worse. So I called my homeopath again. What do I do? She came up with a third remedy. And I don't remember what it was, but it was, and I didn't have it, but it was similar. I did research. It was similar to this other remedy, which was Ipecac. And I went, well, I have that. Let's try that. So now I don't think it's going to work anymore. I'm like, homeopathy is bunk. It doesn't work. Let's just try one last time. Put it in the little thing of water. Gave it to my dog. He took a little bit of drink. It totally stopped. I'm like, nah, that couldn't be. So remember I said worse with movement. I put the leash on. I'm, come on. And I'm dragging him. We're going to go for a walk. And I'm dragging him around. Nothing. Oh my God. So then it came back a little bit. I gave a little water. Done. That was one of the most dramatic scenes. And I love telling that story because when people say it's all about belief, nobody believed it any more than me. That first one, that second one. And by the third one, I was like, it's not going to work. And so that was great. And I went on my retreat and I gave him to someone to take care of. And I gave these little sugar pellets. You know, they think I'm crazy. I said, if it starts again, just put this in water. It never, ever came back. People go on, oh, it's belief. And I'm like, yeah, you tell that to a mother who has a kid with an ear infection, that they believe in the antibiotics and they don't work. And they're given a homeopathic remedy of which they do not believe it's going to work. And it does.
We hear that story over and over again. And often with animals and with babies, I find we get very quick results because their vital force is very, it's not as suppressed. So the older we get, the more pharmaceuticals and interventions and suppressions on all levels we've had. So often we do need more remedies to really get that vital force to kick into gear. But with dogs and babies, often they haven't had as much intervention so often. So Laurel, how can people get a hold of you? How can they engage with your work? How can they find out more about what you do?
Okay, that's great. Well, I will tell you what I'm doing now. I told you I pivoted again, and I've developed this company. It's called Your Video Angel, and I help entrepreneurs, specifically course creators and membership owners and entrepreneurs, how to use video in their business. And I just had a workshop where I teach them how to make video testimonials, and it did really well. So I'm launching this new business. So the best way to reach me, you could go to my website, which is yourvideoangel.com. Or you could write me my, what's the best email for me to use? If you want to know more about Just One Drop, you could write to, you could just go to the website, which is justonedropfilm.com. And you can get all the information you need there. And then there's always my email, which I could give you if you want to connect it on the podcast. You want me to say it here? Or
yeah, sure. Go for it. I'll have it in the show notes anyway.
Okay. Well, probably the best for this film, you probably should go to justonedropfilm@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. That's probably the easiest.
And let's face it, if you type in Laurel Chaitin in Google, you're the very first person to come up. So it's not
the
really
only
hard to
one
find
out
you.
There. I'm the only one out there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, Laurel, I can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you for creating this incredible documentary. It's touching so many lives. It's waking people up. It is just such an important piece of work. I really urge everyone to go and watch it if you haven't already. You can rent it or buy it for very cheap online. So, or people can still arrange movie screenings and things like that if they want, and they can get in touch with you about that as well. But go and watch this documentary. It will open your mind. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
If you mention Homeopathy Hangout, then you're going to get a 2-for-1 DVD sent to you. Mm-hmm. So I'll make
I've got the
that
physical
offer.
DVD, and I purchased the online copy, and that physical DVD is great with, well, the online one too, but just all the deleted scenes and all the extra bits, and it's, wonderful. I highly recommend it.
So anyway, thank you so much. This was really fun.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so
out.
Much.
Okay. Take Bye. Good care.
Hi, homies. I'd like to invite you to come and join me at the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast Facebook group, where we can discuss past episodes and you can help me decide on new content for the show. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel, where you'll find my free Homeopathy at Home 30-minute introduction video, which is perfect for anyone completely new to homeopathy who's ready to take charge of their own health. Just search for Eugenie Kruger Homeopathy on YouTube. And if you'd like to support this podcast, you can make a once-off $5 donation by visiting www.buymeacoffee.com/hangout. Or if you'd like to make a monthly donation, you can visit www.patreon.com/homeopathy hangout. And if you're in Australia and you'd like to purchase one of our beautiful homeopathic kits, single remedies, or one of our amazing combination remedies, visit www.eugeniekruger.com, where you can also sign up to our newsletter so you don't miss out on any special offers. And if you're interested in advertising on our show, please email info@eugeniekruger.com. Thanks so much for listening.